When Facebook gives you an ad for the pasta you had for dinner last night, you might feel a little squirmy, even if you like that pasta and might want to buy it again. So where does that feeling come from? What is the worry of companies having more access to personal data? Well, Ryan Calo has been trying to answer that question. Calo is a law professor at the University of Washington and co-founder of the recently launched Tech Policy Lab. They're taking a look at how policy should regulate the use of personal data, and he joins us in the studio today. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
So companies using customer data is not really new. If I buy Breyer's ice cream, there's something on the coupon that might be for Haagen-Dazs or maybe for more Breyer's ice cream. It's been going on for quite a while. What's different about the way that companies are using personal data now?
Well, I'm seeing some trends that is moving away from just using personal data to deliver you something that you might want, right? To make sure that the ad that you see online, for instance, matches your interests, right? I'm seeing the possibility going forward of using data about you really to persuade you in a unique way, or maybe even use that data in a way that disadvantages you.
Explain that a little bit more. Persuade you in a unique way. What's that mean?
Well, for instance, there is a study out of Stanford University that that leverages the idea that you like people more who look like you. And I don't mean demographically. I mean literally look just like you, right? And what they found was that you could have people respond more to a politician, say John Kerry or George Bush, right, if you were to subtly morph the politician's face with your own face. The idea was that in a way that wasn't detectable to you, right? And so the idea was to like have the politician deliver the message to the subject when their face was subtly morphed with yours. So then Alessandro Quisti and some colleagues have reproduced this and found that you can actually affect people's willingness to buy if the spokesperson is subtly blended with your face, right? And so what I'm saying is, for instance, there's nothing in terms of service from contemporary companies today or a privacy policy that would prevent them from offering this service to advertisers saying, hey, let your spokesperson be subtly blended with the face of the recipient. That's the kind of thing I'm worried about.
That's so interesting. There were some concerns at one time about ads that would use subtle messages, maybe spoken very softly, that you would not audibly hear but would somehow imprint themselves on you. And you're suggesting these techniques may come forward in a new way.
There's a range of techniques I'm thinking about, right? And so as it happens that this particular example is sort of subliminal. And we remember, there's been a couple of different waves of concern over subliminal messages. I mean, years ago with the experiments of Vickery at Michigan, which has since been debunked, there was this big concern about the embedding of subliminal messages. And we saw that also with lawsuits around, playing a record backwards was causing
right.
people to commit suicide.
But now you think they've really got it down.
Well, I mean, I'm a close follower of the social science. And yes, I think that subliminal cueing and priming is once again sort of coming to the fore, but here this time with a lot of really good data behind it. That's just one technique. I mean, even something as simple as charging someone the most that they might be willing to pay for a product by figuring out what their so-called reservation price is, meaning literally the most they would be willing to pay.
But of course, they do that now on airlines. They will shift the price; it will change up and down depending on when you purchase the ticket. But you're suggesting pricing based on me, Ross Reynolds, and what they think I'll pay.
That's right. And the harm really is really a privacy harm. The idea is that you would, shed information about yourself online for a variety of purposes and not realize that one of the purposes that it might be used would be to disadvantage you, say, as against price. In other words, here you are browsing on the internet with a particular browser or a particular hardware like a laptop, and it turns out that maybe you see a higher price or a different deal because you're using a Mac or you're using Firefox. And just you didn't anticipate that would be a repercussion. And, the consumer of the future, I'm worried, will always have to be on guard against a company, not all companies, but an unscrupulous company taking advantage of them.
I'm speaking with Ryan Calo, a law professor at the University of Washington. He just started a tech policy lab to look at some of these questions about how megadata is used to market to us. And you also mentioned this could be used to disadvantage you. Could you explain more about what you meant by that?
Well, sure. I mean, think about why anyone sort of closely studies anybody else, right? I mean, if you're playing tennis or something like that and you see your opponent, you know, from the week after studying you, watching you, there's only really one reason why, you know, he or she would be doing that. And if you miss too many backhands, guess what you'll see in the tournament next week, right? So then you have to ask yourself, like, why do companies closely study consumers? And part of the reason that they do it is because they want to improve their services and they want to make sure that you're having a delightful experience. And I wouldn't minimize. I think that's a really wonderful use. But sometimes they're like, you know, seeing how long you'll sit down before a movie that you paid $10 for and sit through commercials. And they, you know, in other words, they're trying to figure out sort of exactly how long should they make those obnoxious commercials before a movie that you paid for. And maybe they'll experiment on consumers in order to figure out what the maximum amount of time would be before people complain. And it's that kind of study and experimentation that I'm bothered by.
Is there anything there? These are potential problems, but is there anything you've seen so far that shows that they really are using some of these very deceptive methods that might disadvantage us and use this information in an unfair way to us, the consumer?
I think that we're only seeing the beginning of this, right? And so, for instance, the Wall Street Journal, and particularly in the What They Know series, has chronicled things like price discrimination, a dynamic price discrimination where people's information is being used to charge them differently. I've seen things like patents that big companies are taking out on some of the techniques that I'm describing, where they maybe will change the character of an ad, not to show you what's most relevant to you, but to use the persuasion strategy that's more likely to win out, right? And, you know, we're seeing in politics a lot of sort of subtle changing of messages based on what you know about the recipient. And so we're in early days. I don't believe that this is a full-fledged problem today.
But you are a law professor, Ryan, so I assume that means that you think this may be want to be the subject of possible legislation at some point in the future.
I don't know. You know, I mean, in the paper, Digital Market Manipulation, which folks can find on online, you know, I talk about it, that it's really an issue of incentives, right? I mean, I want to make sure that the incentives of large corporations with lots of data about us align with our own incentives. And so, you know, regulation is tough. I mean, you know, it's hard for regulators to determine in advance exactly what the right rule should be. But what about a requirement, say, that a company would have to have a paid version of its website, you know, where you pay like $5 a month and they never use your data against you, you know, a way to realign incentives, to opt out,
because we opt in all too easily these days. Ryan Calo, law professor at the University of Washington, co-founder of the recently launched Tech Policy Lab, where they'll be looking at these issues and also how consumers respond to some of these techniques. And we want to have you back to tell us how that experimentation goes.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot.
This is The Record. I'm Ross Reynolds.